Well, I'm not sure what you've got planned for the weekend, but if you're ever short on conversation at work, that's a good question to ask. Monday, Tuesday, default, how was your weekend? What did you get up to? Wednesday's a difficult day. You can just complain about it being hump day, and perhaps that's the day to vent your frustrations about work. And Thursday, Friday, you've got that light at the end of the tunnel. What are your plans for this coming weekend? And I think it's a good, safe conversation, because looking forward to a light at the end of the tunnel will be someone's hope. And with hope comes joy. So it's going to be a pleasant conversation that will occur. And I found, especially when I was studying, so at college and when I studied again theology, the key question that would allay any fears and bring a smile to people's face was, what do you have planned for your holidays? Even if you were staring down exams and you had overdue assignments, or even when my friends had screaming kids at home, they would always smile when it came to talking about their summer. Because that is hope in spades, isn't it? The prospect of rest brings joy to people. But there's some things that even a two-week holiday won't fix. So redundancy, if you're redundant, having a rest from work won't solve itself. If you're sick, then that doesn't go away when you're on holidays either. And what we see here in this passage that Dave has just read for is Jesus come face to face with a man who had one of those kind of problems, a problem that wouldn't go away by just resting, by taking some time off work. He couldn't work, and the only hope that this man had was in fact a false hope. He was clinging to his false hope so much that when hope walked up to him and spoke with him, he didn't recognize it, which is the first thing that we see in this passage. I'm going to read just that first couple of paragraphs again for us, the false hope that this man had. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the sheep gates a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Now, the pool at Bethesda, where this happened, is a modern archaeological site. It's ruins, and it's now been buried by successive generations of construction in Jerusalem. But although they doubted for a while whether this was a real story and a real place, in the 19th century, they found it. And over the past century, they've found it again and again as they've done archaeological digs around the area. And what it was, and what it still is ruins, is two pools surrounded by four colonnades and then another set of columns dividing the two pools in the middle. And that's where this man had gone. When he explains that he wants to be healed to Jesus, we see his reason for being there, that he had a suspicion, perhaps a superstition, that the first person into the water when the water was stirred would be healed. But although his friends might have dropped him there or his family dropped him there each day, he didn't have a companion to then be the first one into the water, and so complains to Jesus about how he doesn't have any hope and it's not his fault that he hasn't been healed. Now, he, unfortunately, having been caught up in this suspicion, hadn't seen that real hope had been dawning in Jerusalem, because Jesus had started his work and started performing his miracles of healing in the city. Back in John chapter 2, at the end of the chapter, we hear that now while he was in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, a previous festival, many people saw the signs he was performing and believed in his name. But this paralyzed man or this invalid didn't see the works or hear the works that Jesus had started because he was busy at the pool of Bethesda wanting to be the first man in. And so Jesus in his kindness singles this man out. Hearing that he'd been in this state for 38 years, Jesus takes the initiative and approaches him. My grandparents spent most of their life building up hope in retirement. They were small business people and ran a dry cleaning agency, and for 30 years worked very hard at it to the point where it was a profitable business and they could sell it to provide a nest egg for the next 10, 20, 30 years. But unfortunately, the man who offered the price and bought the business turned out to be an alcoholic, and as he struggled with his addiction, he paid only the down deposit, the down payment, and never delivered any more money on the business. And because my grandparents were very, very kind and didn't want to ruin this man or his marriage, they just let it slide. And so their promising retirement became a struggle to pay the bills. As my grandma lived on for the next 30 years, she found life pretty hard. They'd worked their whole lives looking forward to this rest of retirement, and in the end, it had been a false hope. It didn't deliver on what they thought it promised. Work is hard. We've been looking at the Bible story of work, about God being a worker and humanity, and then what's become of work since human activity in the world. And we've seen that work is hard. It's cursed. It's frustrating. But it's the rest that we look for as our refuge from this hard work often isn't what it sells itself to be. Alain de Botton is a famous atheist, but he's more famous for other books that he's written. And a book that he wrote a couple of years ago was called The Art of Travel, where he just comments on our experience of holidays and how the reality of holidays aren't what we're sold when we buy the glossy magazine. Because the glossy magazine doesn't have Alain de Botton on the front of its cover. It's got models there. And when we turn up to the holiday, well, we bring ourselves and all of our issues with us, but we're also confronted by other normal people. And so the reality of holidays looks more like this. A picture that Alain de Botton took on one of his holidays of two women sunbaking, one woman who looked like she'd been sunbaking for about 30 years. The reality of holidays even isn't what we expect them to be. And it turns out the reality of retirement, statistically, isn't what we expect it to be either. Retirement is bad for your health, the survey says. The first year of retirement might be good as you get extra rest, perhaps catch up on some of the flogging that you've been doing of your body for the past 30 years. But beyond that, it's a health hazard. You're 40% more likely to become depressed or experience some other psychological distress, and you're 60% more likely to get a terminal illness. What's much better for your health is to just cut back on work and to work part-time or occupy yourself in other hobbies or activities where you volunteer for the good of society. Jesus, though, in this story, confronting a man with false hope, shows us where we can find real rest. He shows us the real place of rest there in verse 8. Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mats and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mats and walked. At the start of the Bible story of work, we see God creating this universe with just words. All he does is speak and it happens. And again, here we see Jesus just speaking and it happens. Jesus is like God. His work in this world, first of all, signaled what the future would look like and then completed what was necessary for the curse to be reversed. Because in the last talk, we saw that as a result of humanity's evil and our individual part of it, we all experience the curse of God, the frustration of work, the curse of sickness and eventually death. But Jesus comes and his work makes it possible for that curse to be turned around, to be lifted. And as he signals what the future will look like, Jesus embodies and gives us little pictures of what God is really like. Humanity at the beginning was created in God's image, in his likeness, to represent something of who God was to whoever was looking. But now, because of our choices, that image is cracked. The best that we can offer is a broken reflection of God. And then Jesus came into the world and shows us exactly what God is like. Here we see his power and we see his compassion, his heart. Jesus represents God perfectly. And so as we look at Jesus, we can see the best that God, that life offers, a representation, a relationship with God as he really is. A few years ago, a friend of mine won a prize, and instead of using it herself, she gave it to me and my family as an overseas holiday and said, you can go wherever you like within this budget. And being new to Western Australia, we thought we'd better have the quintessential Western Australian experience and went to Bali. We had a two-week holiday in Bali, which was great because we got our beds made for us every day. Every meal was cooked for us. And there was so much entertainment laid on for the boys, so many things to do as a family, that we didn't even have to discipline them that much. They actually listened to us for once. And so we rested from a lot of the activities that occupy us every day. And I think the holiday was even better because we knew the person who'd given it to us as a gift. And the whole thing was an experience of their goodness and kindness to us. Jesus offers us true rest, rest from the labours that weigh us down in life. He offers us rest from the consequences of our own choices. He offers us forgiveness, a clean slate with God. And he offers healing from the niggles or the greater sicknesses in our lives. And he offers us an eternal future with the best in life, the presence of God and seeing him as he truly is. When Jesus was quizzed about his actions, he defended himself in this way. Don't be amazed at this. Sorry, I've skipped to my next point there. When Jesus was quizzed about his actions, he said that what he had done for this paralyzed man or this invalid was just a picture of what he would do for the whole world in the future. And this is where he said these words. Don't be amazed at this, for a time is coming when all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come out. Jesus went on in his life to perform even greater works than healing this invalid of 38 years. He even called one of his friends who'd been dead for 4 days to come out of his tomb, and he did. But he said all of that work is a picture for what he'll do in the future, where every person who's lived and died in this world will hear him say, it's time to get up now, and will come out. Jesus offers us hope, rest from the enemy, the greatest enemy of death. And in contrast to the false hope that we often hold on to, Jesus offers us the prospect of real, lasting rest, real rest, which is what we see in verses, well, we'll pick it up from halfway through Verse 9, halfway through, the day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who'd been healed, it's the Sabbath, the law forbids you to carry your mat. But he replied, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk. So they asked him, who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk? The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, see, you're well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who made him well. The Jewish leaders took their day of rest, the Sabbath, Saturday for them, very seriously, and they'd come up with 39 different classes of activity that were forbidden on the Sabbath. And it just happened that carrying anything of substance, like a mat, was work. And so they criticized this man who passes the buck to Jesus. I'm just doing what I was told by the man who healed me. And Jesus defended himself in this way. This is where we get to this slide. In his defense, Jesus said to them, my Father is always at work to this very day, and I too am working. Because at the beginning of the story, God had done work for 6 days and then rested on the seventh. He had worked for 6 days creating this amazing universe and putting in its place and populating its parts. But then on the seventh day, he rested from that work of creating. And so the Jewish leaders are saying, We're supposed to do what God did. We're supposed to rest. And Jesus rightly points out that, yes, God rested from his work of creating, but this whole universe depends on him every moment. He sustains it. So I'm just doing what God does. I'm just showing you what God is like. He shows compassion and he heals, he works on your Saturday. I have a recurring dream that I've more recently shared with my wife. It happens every couple of weeks, where not on the dot, but on average every couple of weeks, where I'm back at high school. For crazy reasons, I've decided to repeat year 12. But now I'm a bit older, I'm not 18 anymore, and I'm a bit duller. Plus, I haven't been going to a lot of the classes. And in the dream, I realized that I'm going to be examined for English, and I don't even know what the books are. And I realized, to my horror, that I've wasted an entire year of my life. Now, my wife is a social worker and has studied psychology and spent most of her teenage years interpreting people's dreams. And she explains to me, it's okay, Paul, everyone feels work anxiety. We feel like we're not qualified for life. But the best thing about these dreams is the moment where I wake up and I realize that I'm not in year 12 and I'm not facing exams, that work is finished. And Jesus says, yes, God has finished his work of creating. And at the end of his life, he said, I have finished the work of showing you what God is like. In fact, I finished all the substantial work that needs to be done for you to be part of life with God, to be forgiven. And so rest for the Christian now isn't the absence of activity, it's that quiet confidence that comes when we understand what Jesus has done. That we really do know God as he is, that we really can have forgiveness and we can have a hope of living with God for eternity. It's a quiet confidence, a peace that comes because of God's activity. Jesus has worked so that we can rest. Our work is just cursed and a mixture of good and bad, but God has worked. He's done a new work so that the world can be cured and we can be part of an eternal rest with him. A friend of mine a couple of years ago, Simon, went to visit his good friend in hospital. And that man was a Christian and terminally ill with a sickness. And so Simon knew that it was probably going to be the last time that he'd see this friend, that he only had a couple of days expected to live. And so he asked him, how are you feeling? Not in terms of how are you feeling in your sickness, how are you feeling that you're going to die soon? And his friend called him in closer and said, I don't really want to tell anyone this, but I'm a little bit excited. Because he was looking forward to Jesus' completed work and the benefits of that. Rest with God, rest from sickness, rest from the prospect of death, rest from the frustration of his labor in this world. Not the absence of any productive activity for eternity, but enjoying life at its best with God. And I think if holidays can perk us up, or talk about the weekends can be that light at the end of the tunnel that brings us joy, how much more this lasting eternal rest that is true hope. Rest that's been bought for us by Jesus.